Ladies and gentlemen, Columbia presents another program of the Church of the Air. This is the 10th anniversary year of this nationwide religious institution, and the Jewish service today is one of a special series devoted to observance of this anniversary. It comes to you from station WGAR in Cleveland, and is conducted by Dr. Abba Hillel Silver, Rabbi of the Temple, Cleveland, Ohio. The subject of Dr. Silver's address is The Outlook for America. The Temple Choir, under the direction of Mr. Alfred R. Willard, joins in the service. First this afternoon, the Temple Choir sings a Hebrew melody written by Mark Spicker, entitled Ma Tovu.
Sir!
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we give the service into the hands of Dr. Abba Hillel Silver.
My dear friends, the outlook for America is inextricably bound up today with the fateful military decisions now in the making in the old world. The American people have now realized this fact, though somewhat belatedly. It took the frightening events of the last few months abroad to startle our people into a final realization of the interlocking destiny of the Eastern and Western hemispheres, and into a final surrender of those comfortable notions of political and economic isolationism. From now on, we will not expect our foreign policy to be spun in an international vacuum. The fiction of national security through strict neutrality has been shattered forever. The nations which relied upon it have been destroyed. Suddenly we have discovered that our cherished way of life is not quite secure. Neither our wealth, nor our military establishment, nor the intervening oceans now seem to be adequate defense. Suddenly we have discovered that we are not quite secure even from attack from within. We have become apprehensive of the menace of subversive forces within our nation, which we chose to ignore heretofore. The old world has moved in upon us again, unbidden and unwelcome, but it is here. Most Americans now understand that if the Allies are defeated, the outlook for America and the American way of life will be grave indeed. Not that we shall have to face an imminent invasion, but our American world will become closely encircled by a hostile world, and the pressure upon it, particularly the economic pressure of a coordinated continental slave labor economy upon our free economy, will increase as the years go by. But our greatest danger, we suspect, will come from within. A Nazi victory abroad will hearten and inspire their agents, friends, and admirers here. Nothing succeeds like success. Fascist and Nazi sympathizers, adventurers, and would-be Hitlers will spring up like mushrooms all over our country. They will attempt to do here what the Nazis will have succeeded so brilliantly and so swiftly in doing abroad. And they will not be lacking powerful industrialists here who will be willing to play the role of American Fritz Thyssens to would-be American Hitlers. The outlook for the United States in case of a Nazi military triumph is thus a very serious one indeed. We should therefore, along with rendering maximum aid to the free peoples now fighting for survival, build up our own national defenses expertly, adequately, and swiftly to a point where they will be a strong deterrent to any would-be aggressor. We should not, however, forget that a strong military defense in itself is not sufficient. A greater defense for a nation is the loyalty of its citizens and their essential spiritual. There are two ways in which these can be conserved. The forces hostile to our form of government and to our free institutions must be continuously exposed. No democracy is immune, as long as it is a democracy, from anti-democratic propaganda, either native or foreign. Forces opposed to democracy will use the very technique and machinery of democracy, as well as its abundant tolerance, to destroy it. In the face of this, democracy must not remain naive, complacent, or doctrinaire. It must aggressively expose and harass every form of propaganda which is hostile to its basic conceptions of life and government. But no hysteria, no witch hunting, no mass stampede away from the Bill of Rights and the constitutional guarantees of a free people. We should not, in our great concern and impatience, permit ourselves to resort to extra-legal and unconstitutional methods to obtain even worthy and desirable objectives. To destroy liberty in an effort to preserve it is the height of folly. It should not be forgotten that education still remains the strongest bulwark of a free people. The American people, and especially our youth, should be educated in the techniques of modern propaganda which have been so skillfully elaborated in our day. They should be made aware of the methods which are being employed and the true character of the organizations and governments which employ them. They should be informed as to how racial and religious antagonisms are aroused and exploited in order to divide a people, to disrupt its unity, to confuse its councils, and to undermine its resistance to aggression. Our people should also be re-educated in the philosophy and science of democracy. We have long assumed that education and democracy will somehow take care of itself as an unconscious byproduct of our day-by-day living. This is no longer true. Democracy is under fire today and on the defensive. Many people have rejected it as antiquated, inefficient, and distinctly harmful. Totalitarianism has millions of enthusiastic devotees in all parts of the world. Quite deliberately, therefore, and specifically, we must begin to educate our people anew, and especially our youth, in the principles, practices, advantages, and obligations of democracy. In the school, the home, the church, through the written and the spoken word, an educational crusade in defense of democracy must be launched. And the time is very short. In this connection, my friends, we ought to bear in mind that the source of all political democracy in the Western world is fundamentally religion, and that the basic charter of man's dignity and freedom is God. Friends of democracy have forgotten the religious origin of the democratic dogma in the modern world. They have forgotten that political freedom came to the Western world as a result of the struggle for religious freedom, and not vice versa. Religion kindled the torch of political freedom in the world, and irreligion is extinguishing it today. When the founding fathers of our country wrote into the Declaration of Independence, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights," or when they declare that resistance to tyrants is obedience to God, or when they engraved upon the Liberty Bell the biblical mandate, "Proclaim ye freedom throughout the land unto all the inhabitants thereof," or when they placed upon the first seal of the newborn republic the biblical figure of Moses leading the children of Israel out of Egypt, they, the founding fathers, were summoning religious truth, religious authority, religious tradition to sanction their political revolution. The American Revolution kindled its torches at the flame of a religious dogma that men were created by God to be free and equal. The long protracted struggle in this country to emancipate the slave received its powerful momentum not from economics or from any materialistic conception of history, but from deep religious convictions which revolted against the enslavement of human beings, children of God, and which saw in the Civil War a divine retribution for the sins which the nation committed against the black man, and which heard in the tramp of men marching to battle the footsteps of God. His truth is marching on. And the reason why the democratic movements are perishing in the Western world today, is because of an increasing pessimism due to a loss of confidence in the reality of spirit, of the spiritual order of God. Man has become frightfully small in our day, reduced in stature, stripped, and spiritually cowed, because his kinship with God, which crowned him with glory and honor and made him a little lower than the angels, has been contemptuously rejected by a world which has tried to build its life upon foundations of pseudo-scientific materialism. No society can long remain godless and free. If our crusade to redeem democracy is to succeed, it must draw its inspiration from the inexhaustible springs of religious faith, from the classic religious dogmas of the sanctity of human life, of man's inviolable personality and his God-given rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, of which no state, no majority, no class, no party has the right to deprive him. The loyalty and unity of our citizens, my friends, will be enhanced still further if they are made to feel that the American way of life is the best way of life because in it they find security and happiness. Democracy cannot long survive widespread and prolonged economic suffering. All dictatorships have risen to power upon the economic miseries of their people. A generation of young men and women denied the opportunity to work and to build careers, consigned to demoralizing idleness and frustration, unhappy and lost, is the dictator's very workshop. Even the brutalities and indecencies of dictatorship become less repugnant, and the ways of freedom appear less appealing in the presence of democracy's tragic failure to care for its people and to safeguard them against frequent and disastrous periods of unemployment and suffering. Sound American patriotism has therefore quickly translated itself into an intelligent and ardent program for social justice, for a fairer distribution of the social goods, for a larger measure of protection of our people against the hazards of unemployment, of sickness and old age, for economic stability, not cycles of boom and collapse. Sound patriotism will look upon the disease and crime-breeding slums of our land, the blasted areas, the underprivileged children, the jobless and hopeless youth, the unemployed man, the underpaid worker, the unsheltered aged. It will look upon these as the real Trojan horse which traps a free people into destruction. People who feel that they have a stake in their country, that the institutions of their land are being used to the utmost to help them to a more secure and abundant life, and who can see in them the promises of even greater happiness and well-being for their children, such people will not be inveigled by the propaganda for a totalitarian millennium and will not be led into disastrous revolutionary adventures. In our effort, my friends, to defend our way of life here, we will be strongly helped by some factors which are uniquely our own. Ours is a long-established democracy. We have gone through severe crises before, including a civil war, without sacrificing our democratic apparatus. We prefer to govern ourselves. The idea of being ruled by a Führer or a Duce or a Commissar is hateful to our very souls. We have a wholesome capacity for self-criticism. We are ready to acknowledge our mistakes and to take the blame. We can and we do reverse ourselves. We are not hostile to experimentation. We have vast natural resources. Ours is not a country, but a continent. This is not a starved or crowded land, and our people are not doomed by circumstance to a low standard of living. Poverty is one of the bitterest foes of democracy. There need be no poverty here. We are a young nation. We are not handicapped by old world animosities. Better than any other people on earth, we can preserve our distinctive way of life if we build up its essential social, military, and spiritual defenses. Now, what is this American way of life? What are the classic elements which give uniqueness and distinction to it? First, the importance of the individual. Every man is possessed of certain inalienable rights. The state cannot veto them. No majority can abrogate them. All men, regardless of race and religion, are equal before the law. And any attempt to subjugate the individual to the state or to discriminate against him in law because of race or creed is a frontal and deadly attack upon the American way of life. Secondly, government by consent and not by constraint. Government from within and not from without. Dictatorship is government imposed from without. Democracy is government self-imposed from within. The American genius strives to achieve the best possible way of life for the largest possible number of citizens through their own voluntary enterprises, through free experimentation, and step by step through the evolutionary processes of trial and error. It rejects all proffers of ready-made millenniums at the spear point of revolution and dictatorship. It prefers the slower and less glamorous way of government, but it also avoids all the horrors of government by purges and liquidations, by terrorism and expropriation, by espionage and slavery. And finally, the grace of tolerance. We are a composite people. Many races had a hand in the discovery, exploration, colonization, and development of this great country. Ours is a nation made up from its very inception almost entirely of immigrants. Our American Life is a fine mosaic in which many separate racial and religious identities are grouped into one noble pattern. And despite occasional lapses, there has prevailed a wholesome attitude of goodwill, tolerance, and cooperation among our people. The genius of America has manifested itself in steadily dissolving the hard concretion of groups and reducing them to their individual human components. Europe is concerned with the rights of minorities. America is concerned with the rights of man. Those people, therefore, in our midst who would break up American life into hostile racial or religious groups, or who would persuade others to judge American citizens not on the basis of individual worth, character, or achievement, but on the basis of the race to which they belong, or the religion to which they subscribe, these are the deadliest foes of the spirit as well as the peace of the American people. This true vision, my friends, of American life should be kept undimmed in these darkening days. It is our sole hope for the future. It is our one chance to keep our dear country free from the ravages of the hates, the bitterness, and the conflicts which have disfigured the old world. For the last 20 years, the desperate peoples of Europe have tried a way of life which is the very opposite of the American way of life, the suppression of the individual, government by ukase and dictatorship, and race and religious intolerance. And it has led them, as inevitably it must, to the blood-soaked battlefields of war. God grant that we do not follow in their tragic footsteps.
Thank you, Dr. Silver. Our Church of the Air broadcast continues this afternoon with Retzeh, a Hebrew melody written by Edelson and sung for us by baritone Don Dewhurst. Temple Choir concludes this afternoon with Mendelssohn's Judge Me, O God, the 13th Psalm.
Oh.
Columbia's Church of the Air, coming to you from station WGAR in Cleveland. Today's Jewish speaker was Dr. Abba Hillel Silver, Rabbi of the Temple, Cleveland, Ohio. Copies of the address may be obtained by writing to the station to which you are listening. Next Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Dr. Otto Paul Kretzmann, president of Valparaiso University, Valparaiso, Indiana, will conduct the Church of the Air service. And at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Church of the Air will present the Sistine Chapel Choir, Vatican City, Italy, in a special Christmas program of sacred music. Lawson Deming speaking, this is the Columbia Broadcasting System.